Thanks to IHRC for organizing this event and for giving me the opportunity of speaking to you all. Yes, as you've heard, I'm from Jews for Boycotting Israeli Goods, which responded to the 2005 Palestinian call for a BDS campaign worldwide. In 2016, most of us became involved in setting up a new organization called Free Speech on Israel, which published this flyer, What Anti-Semitism Is and What It Is Not. I will leave copies in the front here, and I've already put copies on the literature rack in the back. By the end of my talk, you'll see why you should read it or look it up on our website. So Free Speech on Israel was set up in spring 2016 in response to a campaign weaponizing anti-Semitism as a weapon against any criticism of Israel as an apartheid colonial settler state. We have variously called this a witch hunt, a smear campaign, an intimidation campaign. There are many things to call it. But fundamentally, it systematically conflates anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. Now, that conflation goes back decades, at least to the time when I became an anti-Zionist activist in the 1980s. But starting in 2016, this took on a new form, a much more effective form than ever before, through a new coalition around the Labour Party. I say around, and I'll explain what I mean. It had at least four main components, which you may have seen in passing in the mass media, but perhaps didn't think of them as a coalition. So first component is Labour Zionism, in the form of the so-called Jewish labor movement, affiliated to the Labor Party, but more importantly, affiliated to the Israeli Labor Party, which began a century ago with the slogan, employ Jewish-only labor. Does that sound familiar from some other places in the world? And they've been holding training sessions on anti-Semitism in Labor Party branches, in students' unions, and in other organizations, all sponsored by the Labor Party hierarchy, which is the second main component. In particular, the so-called compliance unit, which judges and, in many cases, punishes members for supposedly not complying with Labor Party rules, such as bringing the party into disrepute. And they've suspended hundreds of members, you know, including, of course, Ken Livingston, for supposedly anti-Semitic statements without any due process. And these punishments, in turn, encourage more accusations of anti-Semitism, you know, in the knowledge or the expectation that these will lead to yet more punishments of more activists in the Labour Party. Third component is the Parliamentary Labour Party, especially those who were associated with the New Labour Project, and then who were in horror at Jeremy Corbyn becoming leader. And regardless of their views about anti-Semitism or Zionism or Palestine, they joined this coalition to smear pro-Palestine activists and to undermine Jeremy Corbyn's leadership because they opposed his politics. And then the fourth main component is the mass media, all of the mass media, especially The Guardian, whose left-wing image adds credibility to the smear campaign. Now, this intimidation campaign has many weapons, especially the punishments, which lead people to be fearful, even people outside the Labour Party. I mean, I've been an activist on this issue over four decades, but it was only around last year, for the first time, I was hearing people standing up at public meetings saying, I'm frightened to talk about Palestine. And some of them were longtime activists. In fact, when speakers from our campaign give talks at Labour Party branches or Labour Party meetings, well, there's some applause. And then afterwards, sometimes someone comes up and says, oh, I agree with everything you said, but I didn't want to applaud because I was afraid someone would take down my name and then add me to the accusations of anti-Semitism. No, in the knowledge that there is no due process in the Labour Party. This is going on all over the country, both within and outside the Labour Party, including churches, which have agreed to book events around Palestine, and then they are accused of hosting an anti-Semitic event under various pretexts, and then in many cases they are panicked into canceling the event on short notice. Now, a key weapon in this campaign is a definition of anti-Semitism. Which starts, quote, "Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred toward Jews." Maybe. It doesn't say is, it says maybe. Why? Because, according to the whole document, anti-Semitism may be expressed in many other ways. Which ways? Well, there follow 11 examples, 7 of which are about Israel. Surprise, surprise. That's why it says maybe. I'll come back to some of those examples. But why does this definition arise in the first place? It came from the American Jewish Committee, a U.S. pro-Israel organization whose main mission is to counter the one-sided treatment of Israel in the United Nations. And here they don't mean the U.S. vetoes of U.N. resolutions critical of Israel. They mean the General Assembly resolutions, which overwhelmingly condemn Israel. But it's being protected by the U.S. veto, of course, from any practical sanctions. Now, the author of this definition, Kenneth Stern of the American Jewish Committee, gave a talk at a conference on the definition itself in Israel, where he said, of course there is discrimination on both sides of the green line, meaning between, you know, so-called Israel-Palestine, though of course it's all one country. It's all one regime. He says, but to label this as apartheid is an accusation linked with anti-Semitism. Because if one sees Israel as an apartheid-like state, then it is an evil and pariah state. And then anyone who supports that state in any way is suspect. So true. But he draws the opposite conclusion. Therefore, it must be taboo to use the phrase apartheid Israel. And sure enough, of those 7 examples about Israel, one of them is, quote, denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, for example, by claiming that the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavor. And we take a long time to unpack that short sentence, which is very cleverly designed to confuse and intimidate people. But of course, it equates Jewish self-determination with a state. It assumes that there is a nation. I mean, self-determination by definition makes that assumption. It assumes that Jewish people all over the world constitute a nation. Well, this is racist. And in fact, this goes back to various anti-Semitic ideologies, such as the original Zionism, which was a Christian Zionism, not a Jewish Zionism. And then later, the Nazi ideology, which characterized Jews everywhere, especially in Germany, as a nation who didn't belong there. They belong somewhere else. That's another story for another time. So this definition has a long, complex history. To make a very long story short, when it first appeared in public, it was in 2006, I think, on the website of the European Union Monitoring Committee on Anti-Semitism and Xenophobia, just for discussion. And it was soon attacked by all the Jewish pro-Palestine groups in Europe, including our own, because it was a racist stereotyping of Jews as Zionism, among other reasons, as well as being, of course, anti-Palestinian. So this suppressing any criticism of Israel as an apartheid colonial settler state, and from a Jewish standpoint in particular, creating resentment against Jews for suppressing debate, implicating us in the crimes of Israel and the intimidation of people. Now, I'll do fast forward to December 2016, when this definition was adopted by the UK government. And then the next month, Joe Johnson, the education secretary, sent a letter to the University's UK organization ordering them to circulate a letter to all universities warning them that they must comply with this definition, and secondly, that anti-Semitic events may occur in Israel Apartheid Week, which was coming up a few weeks later. And sure enough, surprise, surprise, several universities banned events that had already been approved or severely curtailed them, including mock Israeli checkpoints, you know, on the open pathways of the campus, on grounds that this would pose a health and safety problem. Moreover, many borough councils around the country adopted this definition, especially labor councils. Why? Because Labor Party central headquarters, remember their role in all this, ordered all councils to do so and to threaten any Labor Party councillor with losing the whip if they did not vote for this motion, for the definition. So this added to the intimidation within the Labor Party and beyond, because then this became a public issue, a matter of public policy, to be implemented by local councils, which could mean denying or withdrawing facilities for events because someone claims that the event is anti-Semitic. Now, the response from the Palestine Solidarity Movement overall was very confused. Some of them said, well, clearly they want us to stop talking about Palestine, so our response is simple enough. Let's keep talking about Palestine. But it's not so simple, because many people were intimidated from getting involved. And more subtly, many engaged in self-censorship. They spoke only about the illegal settlements, not about the Israeli apartheid colonial settler regime, which drives those settlements and continues to drive Palestinians out of any economic opportunities or even out of the country. So for a counter strategy, we have to do more than talk about Palestine. We must use the taboo words, in particular, apartheid Israel. And this has begun. For example, in Camden, the Momentum branch a few months ago held a public event with the term apartheid Israel in the title, you know, partly as a way of testing now the Camden Council policy, having adopted this definition of anti-Semitism. And there was a somewhat incoherent response. First, they accepted the booking for Hampstead Town Hall, then they canceled it, but then they accepted the booking for a less prominent public event, which then did go ahead. So this is a crucial part of a counter strategy, to hold events with the phrase apartheid Israel in some form. For example, why is apartheid Israel a taboo phrase? Or don't mention apartheid Israel. That's for those of you who remember the Fawlty Towers sketch, don't mention the war. This has a kind of satirical edge. Now, most people at this event are from or involved in Muslim groups, which have much greater difficulty in defying this smear campaign, because even before this began, such groups were under systematic intimidation from several quarters, from the Prevent Program, going back a decade, from the Charity Commission, especially since a neoliberal maniac took over the chair, and also from the Home Office, which has been pressurizing Muslim groups, including mosques, to engage in interfaith events. Sounds okay, right? Except that, in general, it ends up meaning a Jewish speaker from a pro-Israel group. And even if that person doesn't talk about Israel, then the presence of that person in the knowledge of their politics then deters any discussion of Israel-Palestine, which might be a common reference point among the Muslim and Christian participants at the event. But it's possible to defy the Home Office. Okay, you want an interfaith event, we'll invite, a Jewish speaker who supports Palestinian rights. And that will attract perhaps Christian participants who do likewise. So let's hold events publicly advertise them in ways that defy and undermine this intimidation campaign. Let's make apartheid Israel a popular topic rather than a taboo one. Thank you.